Hello everyone, welcome to episode number 94 of FC Chat, a special episode. And first of all, I want to apologize. I know I haven't done many FC Chats in the last weeks and so on, but I plan on doing them more regularly again. The next two are going to be the special episodes for CSM elections. After that, there's going to be one, maybe 2 weeks where we won't have FCJ, but after that, they'll be coming again weekly, all right? And like I said, special episode today, CSM elections are coming, and I'm sure you've seen a bunch of podcasts, bunch of interviews and all that stuff coming, highlighting some people even like interviewing every single candidate. I think it's 46. Well, I'm not going to do 46, okay? I picked basically six people that I think would be really good to have on a CSM, and I spread them on two episodes. So this week, I think I could say this is the most promising independent candidate episode, all right? So we have three people on there that are all independent candidates. So they're going to have the hardest battle for votes, honestly, right? That's just how it is. It's the reality. But I think they have the best chances to actually get elected. Asia actually made it on.
Kind of.
I mean, you are on the CSM, all right?
Yeah, yes. I made it on halfway through the term, and I'm happy about it.
Yes, and Stitch came close a couple times. And Ithaca has never run for CSM, but I think it's fair to say he's so well known. We all think he has a solid shot this year. So, yeah. I'm not counting myself in the independent candidate, but for anyone who asks, okay, I'm aware. I'm in the Imperium. It's not that independent, but, you know. All right, let me give you guys a super short introduction, right? So guest number one calls herself a role player or a role play PvPer, I should say. It's a little bit more specific. Last time you were on, actually, you kind of opened my eyes to the whole role play PvP kind of thing. I underestimated how much content the whole role play part could generate, honestly. And how much it would overlap with my playstyle, right? She is on the current CSM. She replaced PGL, who I guess took a vacation and just said, like, guys, I'm not going to have time. I totally respect that decision, by the way, right? To say, like, yeah, well, I'm not going to be there before you waste a slot. Let someone else get in there. And boy, she did, right? Pushing for faction warfare stuff, for example. I don't know. I don't want to give you all the credit, but is it a coincidence?
So my speculation is that they were planning on doing faction warfare updates prior to the CSM, like this CSM, but my existence in the room meant that it's more or less my ideas, right? Like my specific ideas that, like my entire platform got announced at FanFest. My CSM 16 platform.
All right.
That's just my speculation. I'm pulling it out of my butt. So.
All right. So some people could make the argument Asia Elkin is the most effective CSM ever, right? So I mean, you should be running with that one. Right? It's like,
used that, but like it feels very, jerkish.
Well, you don't have to say it. I said it, so it's all good.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I've joked about it, but yeah.
All right. Yep. But welcome.
I do think I have been effective.
But... Welcome to FC Chat. It's yours. Did we have you on three times? No, it's the second time.
Yes.
Third time.
You had me.
Oh, yeah. True.
You had me on the best changes ever with Suetonia and you. True. And then there was another. The last time I ran for CSM, I think I was on, right?
Oh, yep. All right. So. Welcome back, third time. And then the second guest got really close to being elected a few times, has been outspoken about changes for I don't even know how long, like years now, right? Like at least I would say 6, 7 years. Like I'm not talking just like like last year or something, like for a long time. Everyone knows him for it too. And I think I would put him in the category of like an expert on balancing, right? Rather than like an overall, like this is my play style. It's more of like this is like the exact, like when it comes to speed of ships, when it comes to the range, to the whatever, he's the guy, right? So I think people appreciate him the most for his like thorough, like thought out kind of suggestions. Like he's not the guy to just spam shit saying like, oh, get this nerfed or whatever. Like no. There's gonna be like a PowerPoint presentation about it, right? Maybe not PowerPoint, but there's gonna be details about it, right?
There's gonna be breakdowns and numbers.
Correct, correct. There's no half-assed bullshit spamming. So yeah, I'm glad to have you on again, also, Stitch.
Yep, glad to be back.
And then last but not least, of course, I already gave everyone like the super short intro. Everyone knows him probably from like moderation of like tournament stuff, or I guess from smaller scale stuff and like simply or events, right? We got to know each other quite a bit during last FanFest, which was a fucking insanely good time. So he's a Volta pilot. Volta pilots usually have like they're close to my heart, honestly. Like I like the Volta guys, all right? I'm not gonna hide it. Like I said, super involved in tournament stuff, commenting, moderation, and then obviously knows his shit. Otherwise, why would you have someone commenting on stuff, right? If you didn't know it. And yeah, his name is Ithaca Hawk. Welcome.
Hello, and I think I can say from Volta, we like you too.
Ah, that's nice. So I would like to start with Asia, just that role play point of view. Like, I think that was so interesting the last time you talked about it, and I think we didn't talk about it enough. So role play, like most people will probably think, and that's what I probably thought back then, is like, what do we even need that for? You know what I mean? Like, what's the big thing about role play for you?
All right, so I've been role playing in MMOs since Ultima Online back in like 1998, which is my first MMO. I was really young then. All right, I was like 10. All right, but games like Eve, sandbox style games that let you kind of do anything, actually, the role play is very much directly tied to the gameplay when you're role playing. So if you in a game like Final Fantasy 14, your gameplay doesn't really factor into your role play. But in Eve, if your character has a position, you have to go out and like do that thing because you're not some self-insert hero of light. You have to make your own way in the universe. So if I want to be like a badass who goes around and killing people, I have to go around and kill people, right? So role players tend to pick fights that might not be the smartest to pick on a out of character practical level, and we understand that. And sometimes the different considerations that we make in regards to the content we seek out leads to really crazy stuff happening that even non-role players can pile into and enjoy. For example, the war in Philosis win back in 2019 to 2020. It was like months and months and months of fighting in a faction warfare system in the Amar Minmatar war zone called Philosis win that came out of shitposting on the roleplay section of the forums, right? Like an NPC from Delegate Zero, CCP Delegate Zero, posted saying, "We're gonna start enslaving people on the planet of Philosis win." After there is some collusion between the Amar and the Minmatar militias, and role players started piling into the system, and then people started piling in there to kill them, and then it just totally all hell broke loose for like months and months and months and months, And that's not the only time something like that has happened. You expect when role players are talking about storyline driven content, a lot of people are scared that sand is going to be taken out of the sandbox, but that doesn't have to be the case at all. Like, so what if the Empire say, we want this to happen, you don't have to do it. People will do it, and then that's more people in space for everybody to shoot if they want, or to do whatever with. I think that more people in space means everybody wins, and a lot of people can be in space in weird areas that nobody would otherwise be there if the RP element is considered.
By your definition, aren't we all role players anyway? Like, isn't Stitch just role playing as a badass solo guy with just one account?
To some degree, we are all role players, because we're playing a role playing game, right? You're not murdering people in real life when you shoot them down. It's not like the people on like the Vexer's crew that you just blew up are actually, you're going to be charged with murder, right? Because we are playing our part in the universe, and everybody gets to choose their own part in this universe. But people who take like an active approach towards role play and like, whether they be people who say, I want to be loyal to an empire, or I want to hate on an empire and do anything against them without particularly being loyal to anybody else, tend to do stuff that's impractical and make maybe not the, like I said, not the best decision. And sometimes making not the best decision leads to the most fun for everybody.
I don't think it even has to be like the NPC stuff. Like, there's plenty of people who engage with roleplay without even maybe even calling it that. So look at the lots of the pirate corps over the years that have existed. Those people will go to negative 10. They'll run around doing things, and you know, they're pirates. They wouldn't classify themselves as role players, but the smart move would be to either grind their sex status back up or tag it back up to get the benefits of things like gate guns and be able to go to low sec and stuff like that. But they essentially are role playing as these like infamous space pirates with negative 10. They jump into system and their name flashes, and the police say, hey, you know, Arcia, you're an enemy of the Mimitar Republic, get out. I mean, obviously not Mimitar in this case, but you were once.
This will be your last journey into our space. Yeah. Somehow I doubt that.
Exactly. And I've engaged with it as well. So as a pirate, and also in the Ymar Championship, for example, which was a role play tournament. Arcia was in this
We were both in that.
Yeah. So I was a captain of one of the teams in there, and you kind of had to do it almost in like a role play fashion. You had to apply on the forums in the roleplay area.
The heir had to accept you.
Yeah, to the lord of that particular Amarian house. So I applied to Kador. And then when you were teleported into the tournament system, it wasn't CCP, you know, X number person saying, hey, welcome to the tournament system, check your ships. It was like Amar NPCs that were talking to you in a like a roleplay type fashion. They'd be like, welcome Lord Hawk to this great
You're canonically enlorded in the Amar Empire.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there's an item in the game that gives me a lordship and an estate on Kador Prime, on Kador 3 specifically. So if I get elected to CSM, party at the Hawk estate, Kador Prime system, Kador 3, you're all invited.
And talking about the like the role playing, like I remember when I was in Faction Warfare, it seemed like it was a lot easier to get immersed kind of in the role playing in Faction Warfare. Because
what year was that though?
When I was really into Faction Warfare, it was from 2014, maybe late 2013 to 2016. So kind of like the really fun years of Faction Warfare before Citadels came in. But it was like you got used to the people you were fighting all the time and the systems, and like you'd be like, oh, this system is like the hot system that we're all trying to like take. And so then, you know, you'd be like, oh, I need to take it away from the dirty Amarians or whatever, you know. So like you kind of felt more immersed in Faction Warfare just automatically, just because you're always fighting in the same systems, fighting against the same people. familiar corporations. Things would change. You know, you'd see, you know, you lose battles, you win battles. It felt a little bit more fulfilling than like what I'm doing now, which is living in a wormhole and, you know, going out and roaming just, you know, for the sake of roaming.
People always used to be so excited when they saw you in local back then, because back then I was on the Amar militia, and more than a few times we blobbed the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And everybody was always excited because you were like the super good solo pilot in something big usually.
Yeah, I was always in a battle cruiser or a battleship.
Like a Sleipnir or something.
Yeah, there was a group, I don't remember their names. It wasn't Pi. I think it was maybe someone else who lived in Arzod all the time.
That was us. That was Pi.
Oh, it was? Okay. So, yeah. But I remember I made a Hurricane Fleet issue that had a 100MN after on it. And this is like way before the time everyone started putting overprop on everything. So I had like a 100MN Hurricane Fleet issue with a 1600 plate that had like 80,000 EHP. And like you guys, or they would always be like, we hate fighting this thing because we can never hold it down long enough to like actually kill you. Because I also had an MJD on it. So I'd go like 1,000 meters a second. Then I had an MJD. They always would bring like Lachesis or something to like try and keep me long pointed, but they never had a scram. Oh, so it was just
MJD. That wasn't awesome. It was a Lachesis. We lived in Arzad, but there were other people there too.
Yeah. This other group always brought Falcons. That was like their main thing. So
I was Amar only, but
I gotta say, I started Infection Warfare in like, I don't know, 2008 when it was introduced. And the Falcon was the first ship I trained into. Honestly, it was. Wow. That was the first Tech 2 ship, right? Obviously, I was playing other stuff first. But man, Falcons were strong, right? So Falcon, I was like, man, if you can decide the battle, like, why wouldn't I fly this thing, right? So yeah, I tried.
Back in the days where you would like be PvPing with someone like one-on-one and they would decloak their Falcon and just jam you, and you're like, motherfucker, set to -10. This person's a coward.
took great pride in killing Falcons back in the day. Anytime you ran across one, even if they weren't using it against you, they were using it against someone else. They're like, I'm gonna kill that Falcon.
There were Falcons everywhere.
Yeah, and then even if I died, as long as I killed the Falcon with me, I was like, mission accomplished.
And so one of the things that people keep throwing around with the Faction Warfare stuff coming up is that faction ships should have, like, some people go hardcore, which I'm pretty sure you guys are not going to agree with, and say like you can only fly certain faction ships if you are in this militia, right? For example, if you're in a Amar militia, you can fly Navy APOX. I think that would be ridiculous, right?
Yeah,
it'd be very bad. But very bad for the meta.
What about the faction? Like, if you're in the Amar militia, you get an extra bonus. Whatever it is, it might not be something insane. Might just be some lock range. Might just be a tiny bit of optimal range. Whatever it is, right? So people keep throwing that around, and I think it's pretty interesting. What do you guys think? Is that
so? You have to be careful with that, because if you make it like a blanket bonus for, let's say, optimal range, right, for the APOC Navy, then you might find that that's super important. So all the big groups then suddenly enlist all their corps into the Amar militia, or tell people you have to enlist the Amar militia to get this bonus to fly in this fleet. And you've got this artificial gate, which doesn't actually contribute to the war zone in any way, shape or form. You've just got numbers artificially inflated because people want the bonus for the rest of space. If you're going to do it, I mean, it sounds like it could be interesting. And I do have this thing about trying to make the different types of space different, faction warfare having slightly different rules. I think if they did it, but it only applied in faction warfare systems that maybe your empire controlled. So you've got this bonus because you're in an Amar system, but then when you jump into the Minmitar system, you maybe lose that bonus.
That makes sense, yeah.
So I guess on two aspects of that, you know, I address the first one that you mentioned that I think everyone here would disagree with, is the, you know, you only get the bonuses when you're in that faction. Or you only unlock the bonuses or whatever, which, like, the issue I have with that is, like, let's not even talk about, like, the battleships. Let's talk about, like, the base ones, like the Slicer or the Fire Terror or the Comet. Like, these are all super popular in the faction warfare meta. And, you know, they're just used as tools to help people learn how to fly certain styles. So, like, the Slicer is a good kiting frigate. the Comet is a good brawling frigate with blasters or scram fighting with railguns. Firetail is versatile. I wouldn't say it's necessarily as strong as all the other ones, but it's still a decent platform with like artillery. And then the Hookbill is really good at, you know, kind of the similar thing as the Comet, like scram kiting, decent DPS, stuff like that. But if you're saying, well, no, you can't, you know, if you join Minmatar, you can't fly a Slicer anymore because either you're not going to get the full bonuses or you're only going to be getting half of a ship or something like that. So now that completely takes that out of the meta for everyone flying Minmatar. And it also limits like new players being able to like, you know, test that out, see if they like that play style. So I don't think faction ships getting, you know, you know, you're not getting the full bonuses out of the ship just because you're not part of that faction should ever be a thing. Now, having extra bonuses, I think, would potentially work. But, I mean, personally, like, why can't we just balance the ships like we've done for the past, you know, 20 years? Yeah. Like, you know, why can't we just change the stats that we've done in the past? Like, faction battleships haven't been changed since 2013, if you ignore the Tempest Fleet issue. Because the Tempest Fleet issue, I think, had its stats basically just to match the Tech 1 Tempest. That was like a couple of years ago, I think. So that was the most recent Navy battleship change. So, you know, again, in my opinion, it's just like, why can't we just rebalance them to where, you know, they're refreshed for the new meta. You know, we got all these old ships that are basically living the life of the old T1 battleships, like the Armageddon Navy issue. You know, that doesn't work anymore. So let's refresh them and then see where we're at. Like, why do we need to add a gimmick to them? You know, I can understand it a little bit because CCP just loves their gimmicks. But again, like, it just seems a lot simpler to just say, hey, rebalance the ships and we'll kind of see where things sit from there.
I agree with what Stitch said. I think it's a very big point that the ships are between the militias are not necessarily balanced. Like was said, the Armageddon Navy is complete garbage right now. And like
even a Doma Navy. I mean,
the Tempest Fleet issue is great. I think if one militia gets a bonus, even in the faction warfare systems, people just looking to jump into the faction warfare systems for content will still pile into the side that gets the more optimal bonus. And I think that is contrary to what we should strive for, what we want pretty equal sides, right? In each of the militias. I would be against the idea of militia-specific ship bonuses even faction warfare space.
But what would you say about...
With a negative as well. So let's say the Amar ships got a bonus that made them more effective against Minmatar. Just for example, I'm not saying this is a good idea, and Minmatar ships got a bonus to make them more effective against Amar ships because they're fighting in this war zone, so they want to optimize their ships against the enemies. But they are penalized in some way that makes them less effective against other types of ships. So you maybe get a bonus for roleplay style fights, but you would lose benefits elsewhere.
So, I mean, obviously you're just using it as an example, but the immediate issue I see there is that it's imbalanced because of how the weapon systems work. So like, let's say Amar did better against, Minmatar did better against Amar. Well, Amar's main T2 resistances is like explosive kinetic. So Minmatar can always swap to EMP and phase plasma to do more damage against like Tech 2 Amar, or, you know, use hail if you're against just normal armor T1 ships. But like for Amar, they're heavily laser focused. So you can't just say, well, the lasers are going to do more damage to Minmatar when Minmatar have, you know, 80% EM resistance, or, you know, heaven forbid you're using an armor Munin that has like 93% EM resistance. You know, like you can't really scale Amar in the same way. Now, the one thing I was thinking of just through our conversation is maybe you could lean more into the quote unquote roles of each race. So like for Minmatar, maybe all Minmatar ships or all faction ships got better speed and lower SIG, because that's kind of like Minmatar's flavor. Whereas Amar maybe got like a mild armor HP bonus, maybe some agility or something to offset the you know, having to put a bunch of plates in your ships. Galente could, you know, have an agility bonus plus something else, either for drones or hybrids. And Kaldari could get, you know, maybe a lower shield SIG penalty. Like, these are all fairly minor things, I would say, but they wouldn't, I don't think they would scale or be as negative as like straight like weapon or ship bonuses.
I think I would be in favor of them at least trying these things rather than just kind of doing the same like incremental little upgrades, as long as they committed to fixing them if it turns out it broke metas, for example. RC made a very good point that it will basically take away certain ship lines from certain people in certain factions, which is not really fair. So if they did it and found that like this ship usage suddenly took a dive and people were leaving that faction because they couldn't use their favorite ships, then they should be able to not roll it back, but change the bonuses. Like, we saw this, I'm going to use the Pando's favorite word, when Citadels came out, they took years to look into fixing them. They're fixing them now. It's on a good track. I don't think it's fixed yet. But that, like, what, 3 years of stagnation when Citadels came out in 2016 before they started actually trying to fix it, like, you can't do that anymore. Like, you need to be, if you're going to do kind of off-the-wall kind of stuff, like bringing in these faction warfare-specific bonuses, then you need to be willing to adjust them and iterate on them rapidly. And you need to commit to that before you even bring them into the game.
Yeah, I think, so you said, like, iterate on them rapidly and stuff. Same for ship balance. Like, I'm pretty sure you guys would rather see like more constant ship balancing than like every now and then like a bigger iteration on stuff. I think the main issue they have is they don't have like one team just working on ship balance, right? I think they're missing that, or like balancing issues in general, right? Be it jump bridges, we might just talk about that later. Or be it like ships or citadels, you know, that's kind of like, I would count that all. It's like all in the realm of balancing, really, right? I mean, you know, obviously there's more to citadels than just, you know, the guns and stuff. But I think the problem is they don't have that team.
Or they have that team and that team is getting like forced into other projects that aren't necessarily.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is, right? So I would guess when it comes to balancing, it would fall in the hands of Rise, right? Whatever the team is called at the moment, I forgot. It would be CCP Rise and the guys that work with him. But he has his hands full with all kinds of shit, I'm going to assume, right? So every now and then there's going to be that little hole in the schedule. And he's like, all right, we can squeeze in some balancing here, right? And then he's going to talk to some people and stuff. And then find the big issues, but he'll never catch up entirely. You know what I mean? Like, there will always be, by the time the next cycle is coming around, there's gonna be like a shit ton of stuff that piled up. So I think that's the thing that's happening right now.
It's something, by the way, a comment in Twitch chat, Daddy Deep pointed out something. We're all coming from this from like a PvP perspective, saying, hey, if you're in faction warfare, you should get bonuses, like PvP bonuses. But he raises a good point. He says, maybe if you're a Kaldari clone, then and that faction has the upper hand in faction warfare, then you get less taxation. So tying it to other parts of the game rather than just being PvP bonuses for PvP people. So maybe you're part of, you know, as he says, Kaldari, and Kaldari have pushed Galente right back. So now it's cheaper to for sales tax in Kaldari space for your members. I would say you have to be very careful that people don't flip back and forward, so maybe you have to be in it for at least 60 days or something like that.
So
there's an interesting idea to take it away from PvP.
Asi is about to poke a hole
in it. That specific suggestion sounds like people will pile in the Kaldari militia to get Jita sales tax down.
Well, he's talking about faction warfare space, I guess.
Like, but if we're talking about faction warfare space specifically, that would actually be really good, because it would encourage maybe mini hubs to start up in faction warfare space.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And that could be something that would definitely be good for the game and the regions. But if it's just like all of Kaldari space, that's like Jita is far and away the trade hub everybody would want.
We would just be stuck at a Kaldari tier 5 like all year long.
Yeah.
But I do think it's actually a really good idea to push for stuff that reward loyalty over time, as opposed to the current system where people are incentivized to flip back and forth and maximize LP value and not exploit, but like manipulate LP value. And they talked a lot about that at FanFest, loyalty rewards over time. And it's like something that, that fills up as you go, win or lose, the longer you stick with a side. And I think that's something that, since we touched upon it on this discussion, that's something that has been direly needed for a long time.
I fully agree.
Yeah. And like, even with Faction Warfare, like I remember being in Faction Warfare and like dealing with rankings, you know, like your character would get ranks. And like when you're going through the process, you don't know a whole lot about what's going on. Like, you're just like, oh, wow, I'm like gaining all these ranks. But see, the bad thing is when you're like tier five, I think I was like tier four, tier five Minotaur. And I did like three Faction Warfare missions and I got like straight to the max rank, which was general, I think. And I'm just like, okay, cool, I'm general. So like, what now? And just like nothing happened. There's no reason to be a general or nothing tied to those rankings.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice if that could be revamped to have some kind of use. You know, maybe if you're a general and it's actually hard to get to, you know, maybe then you could tie some economy things into that. You know, because yeah, it's like, oh, you're a high ranking general, you know, in the Minotaur, you know, Navy or whatever, maybe you can get, you know, a couple percent off your sales tax or whatever.
I think especially when it comes to like ranks and stuff, like an Eve, like obviously a rank, like let's say you're like strategic fleet commander in an alliance, right? It's not like the gameplay or the game really determines that, right? So I always thought that was weird because, like, for example, the best FCs are also in Faction Warfare at that time, like nobody looked at like what is their rank, right? It's like it should be more about like other players giving that person the rank than the game mechanics, right? If that makes sense. That's what I always thought, like, you know.
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense to have some flavor text around what kind of standing you've accumulated with your militia. And I don't think it gets in the way of like, okay, that person is a Dingle commander, but they're also an FC of a group, and I respect them for that. So like, I feel like the problem with tying stuff directly to the ranks is that it's way too easy to get it with just like the missions that don't contribute to the PvP ecosystem of the area. The Faction Warfare missions are like totally broken right now and have been for a long time, especially when you're in tier five. Like Stitch said, you're in tier five, you get more LP than you can possibly imagine running Faction Warfare missions. And a lot of people just run with multi-box accounts for whatever side's winning. Like they have three Dramuels and three Jackdaws, and they go around the war zone popping missions and running them with their Jackdaws. It's very difficult to catch them running the missions because they burn way off of the beacon. There's an acceleration gate that prevents you from landing right on top of them. They burn way off of the beacon and they snipe with the Jackdaws. And if you go into the site, all your friendly NPCs shoot you because they're morons. Because it's like old mission AI.
Oh my gosh.
And so you basically have to land at the same time and take the gate with them and grab them right on the button. And yeah, that's a very small window. And so these people are like blowing up the value of the LP for the people actually contributing the PvP ecosystem who are getting way less, doing stuff with more risk and losing ships, right? These are the people who should be making money, people who contribute to the fun of everybody else in the area.
Right, right. And like personally, I'd love to see if they would just completely rip out Faction Warfare missions, like just delete them. You know, and I'd like to see them more reworked as like, you know, quote unquote PvP missions. And I know that like there's a history with Faction Warfare and PvP things being abused, but my take on it is more that you have like as an example, like, you know, kill 20 other capsuleers from the other, you know, the opposing militia, but it's like an actual mission. And the payout is very low. Like you're not going to be making like millions of LP out of this. You might get maybe 250 LP or something. But if you're going to be doing it anyway, if your goal in Faction Warfare is like, you know, capture complexes, fight other people, then it's just kind of like a side reward. And maybe you could get like a random skin that's specific to that faction. And so that way, you know, you want to do the missions because you want to get some, you know, special skins for all the Minmatar ships or all the Amar ships or whatever the case may be. And, you know, then that provides more incentive to go out and fight people rather than the current missions, which is just like, you know, like you said, it's just insta jackdaws everywhere that are super hard to catch unless if you're just sitting right on top of them and chasing them around. And then, you know, then again, that's, and then once you do kill them, it's not even necessarily that rewarding. And then they're also inflating the LP prices and causing other issues. So it's like, I'd just rather them just completely gut faction warfare missions and turn them into, you know, something else that incentivizes people to actually fight and engage in the war zone.
See, I would quite like them to implement these things in such a way that they can use some of the AI and the gameplay around things like the NPC Sotillos. Like, I spoke with some people about this a while ago, and we were discussing the concept of maybe in the Minmatar Amar war zone, the Amar militia has got a staging for Tazar, and the Minmatar NPCs have reinforced it, and then that's coming out at a certain time, and you can go there and contribute both as a defender or as an attacker, and that would mean that people get like LP and stuff from it, but it's PvP. You will have like reps coming from your from your friendly militia if you've got the right standings and things like that. Like, I think there's a lot of opportunity for them to use these new systems.
So I'm very excited about the announced battleground sites in Faction Warfare. What they were described at FanFest as like a higher end like site in Faction Warfare that is going to take like a fleet to run. Like, think the flashpoints in Pochven and Edencom fortresses where you need like 10 to 15 higher end ships, and it is a rewarding site that attracts a lot of PvP attention because people are fighting over it. And I think Faction Warfare has needed something like that, because the Plex system as it is pretty good. It needs some tweaks. Like, I think the bigger Plexes should reward more system control than the smaller ones. They currently don't. But the battleground site fills a hole that isn't currently in the Faction Warfare ecosystem, and I think that is a good step, a step in the right direction for replacing the missions as the most rewarding content while still contributing to the PvP ecosystem. Because if you have a site that's like soft capped at like 10 to 15 ships for like the best payout, people are going to end up fighting over that to get the better rewards in ships, in like fleet doctrines and ships that maybe don't get as much use in other Plex fighting.
And so I like that they said on at FanFest that they, you know, they looked at Pochven and they learned some lessons there and stuff, right? It was like very clear that, you know, that model seems to, like, whatever works in Pochven, they want to apply to a more accessible space now, right? That's kind of how they said it. And then Ithaca, the thing you said with the staging fortresses, I guess, you know, if there was like something for like the market guys that they can make just a little bit more money there, right? No taxes, for example. If you seed stuff there, you don't have like, or like maybe not no taxes, but like super low taxes, so people would want to seed it there, and then actually people have an incentive of actually going to that staging fortress and actually buying stuff and doing stuff there and staging from there. Yeah, I think that might just be like interesting. And then if it gets refed by the other side, they will notice, right? Because they stage there actually, and it's not just like some fucking thing that's somewhere on a safe spot. Nobody has it on overview anyway, and it's happening, and nobody even notices, even if they insist, and while it's being done, right? So, yeah, maybe there's something there. Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, I think the key thing is that you can sort of put these under the role play umbrella, but they don't have to be. Like, you don't have to engage with the role play parts of it to engage with the content. But if you want to, you certainly can. And some people will get a lot out of that. Other people who don't aren't forced to engage with it just to take part in that content.
Yeah. All right. So we covered a lot of Faction Warfare. I didn't even have Faction Warfare on my list. That's kind of nice. I do have some more CSM-oriented questions for you guys, too. Just to remind everyone, all these guys, me included, actually, are running for CSM. So how about, what do you guys think is the best way of having influence on CCP? So, you know, maybe Asia, you could start with that because you have some CSM experience. So what do you think? Like, how is the what's the best way to get them to, you know, approach certain issues?
Well, I think the best way is come at any issue you want to tackle from a perspective of this is good, this is bad, why this is good, why this is bad. Explain your position very analytically without perhaps showing emotions you may have pertaining to it. Because if you get like angry and you start to say, oh, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, people get defensive. They don't listen to you as much. If you present to them a fact-based case on a medium which they can see it, obviously, and they will see it, something big, whether it be the official forums, whether it be Reddit or DMing them on Discord, if you're in random servers with them, CCP people love to hear from you. Totally. Right. just present them a well laid out case, factual, based in fact, rather than based in anger. Don't shit talk them. People get defensive if you shit talk them. Even if you are rightfully angry about something, I think that staying calm and presenting your argument factually does reach people. It might not always get enacted, but people will listen, and that's the first step.
Right. And that's kind of my experience as well. Even though I haven't been on the CSM, you know, I've obviously had things implemented starting back from 2015. And, you know, even CCP's called it out on their streams where they're just like, you know, yeah, we listen when it's, you know, presented in a way that, you know, it makes sense or it's factual. So I always call it, you know, reels before feels. You know, you need to lay out everything, you know, objectively, you know, look at the pros and cons. And the other thing that I always try and do when I'm making a recommendation is it something that's feasible for CCP? You know, like there's people out there with, you know, really, really outlandish or big ideas, and they're not necessarily bad ideas. It's just historically CCP doesn't do those things.
Unrealistic.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, you know, yeah, that'd be cool for Eve, but that's more like an Eve 2 thing, if that's ever going to be, you know, a thing, which, you know, I know it's probably not, but like you need a whole new architecture for that to work. CCP is not going to release that in like a three month patch, you know, or the time it would take to release something like that is not going to be worth the payout that CCP gets out of it. Like, you know, people are talking like, you know, there should be more, you know, like tracking, there should be interference with tracking. Like if you're going through an asteroid belt or something, it's like, you know, yeah, that's cool. And that would make sense, but it's not probably going to happen because I don't think Eve is really set up to handle that.
It's basically just to echo what everyone else is saying here. I think it's all in respect. Simple as that. You got to respect them and you got to earn their respect. If you walk in, flip over the table, point at Hilmar and be like, your game's shit, mate, then no one's going to listen to you. You really have to have an opinion, that's fine, but make sure that you can justify it, you can present it cleanly, simply, that you don't just, if people disagree with you, if you're proven to be incorrect or that it's not reasonable, then you know take the feedback, like, oh, good point, I hadn't thought of that, and show them that you're not just standing there in a soapbox shouting and waiting to be have all your ideas implemented.
Yeah, I think it makes total sense. I think also, like you said, some people come in with like these grandiose ideas, right? And I think that's the absolute wrong approach to the CSM. Like, that's not, like, you're not going in with like this new rework of all of Eve and then
they're not obligated to listen to you at all.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it is a problem, right? I mean, it's like a promise. They're just promising to listen to us, right? If we get elected, right, they're promising to listen to us.
They promise to hear us, not to listen to us. There's a difference there.
I thought I was running for Hilmar's job. What are you talking about?
That would be something.
And like that goes with like the two most recent changes that I had put into the game was like the blobs rebalance and then the shield and plate extender roll bonuses on battleships. Like especially the roll bonus on battleships. Like I made that post with, you know, this is what I think CCP can do in a short period of time, because like it's just you're adding a roll bonus and you're not having to do new modules, you're not having to do new industry. It's just on the ship, ready to go. You know, so that's kind of like the mentality I have a lot with a lot of the things that I'm looking at. Like I have bigger ideas that I'd like to see, but then there's that voice in the back of my head of like, yeah, this is a cool idea, but they're never going to put it in because it's just, you know, too complicated or maybe not compatible with the game. And Blops, kind of was on the same functionality, you know, it was just moving things around and basically freeing up bonuses. And it just happened to fall within a time frame where CCP was already looking at a themed patch for Blops. And that's when I had Rise reach out to me. He's like, hey, you know, let me talk to you about these changes. And, you know, they essentially just copy pasted the whole Reddit thread into the Blops changes with a few differences, but for the most part, the same thing.
I think the Blops changes, they nailed, right? I think when it comes to the Blops stuff, I don't feel like Blobs are like oppressive or whatever. The conduit jump, like it feels right, you know, it has like, there's a limit to it too, which is nice. Like I think Blobs wise, they nailed it.
Conduit jump is awesome.
Yeah. What is your take on the Marauders though? Cause man, when I'm roaming around solo, So
burgers for days.
I want to hear your opinions, guys, especially Stitch, because he's the absolute fucking balance guy.
So Stitch probably has the answer.
Stitch gets status. There you go.
Well, there's people that disagree because everyone's familiar with how capitals were in the past. You know, before they nerfed them around like 2019, you had like the max tracking carriers and high angle dreads and stuff like that would just appear because everything had a sino and they just insta-blap a subcap. So they were the best response to pretty much anything, and it became a very stale meta. Well, Marauders are pretty much the same thing now, except compared to like a high angle dread, which was stuck for 5 minutes.
Mobile, right?
Yeah, now you have something that's only stuck for 30 seconds and it has an MJD and it can micro drive around and it can go in the ESS. You know, so you're not safe from anywhere, or you're not safe from it from, you know, in any position, because it can go in all the same places that a subcap can. I don't like that the Marauders got the buffer bonuses, even though I specifically called it out in the thread. T2 battleship should not get the buffer bonuses, which, looking on it now, Blops, I think, are relatively okay, because Blops should always be weaker than like T1 battleships and raw tank. So if T1 battleships are getting a scaled up tank, then Blops getting a scaled up tank doesn't really matter because they're still weaker from a tank level. But like Marauders getting more buffer, like they didn't need it. They're already super strong. Now we're seeing like Paladin fleets, and that's not really where they should be in the first place, because when the Marauder changes happened, Rise specifically said, we're rebalancing them for PvE. And, you know, if something happens with PvP, then cool, I guess. But now they're dominant in PvE, PvP, fleets, like they're everywhere. I really think that Marauders need to lean into that specialization of a T2 ship. And so T2 ships should be specialized to be good at that thing, but maybe weaker compared to other things. So if the specialization of Marauder is supposed to be PvE, then I think we need to separate the DPS and the tank. Now, with that being said, before we get into this, originally Marauders were weak, and they definitely needed a buff. Like, there's no reason to pick a Marauder over, like, a Rattlesnake to run missions or escalations or whatever, because they had lower DPS.
Other than roleplay, right?
Right, you know, and yeah, you had a ton of tank out of them, but, like, they were, like, overkill for almost all PvE. Like, you didn't need a, you know, 5,000, 8,000 DPS tank to run level 4 missions. So that was nice, but again, it wasn't enough to make people want to use them. So I do agree they needed buffs. I just don't think they needed as many buffs as they had. So the main thing that I've thought of recently is splitting Bastion into two modes. So that would be a DPS Bastion. So you're doing the same DPS you are now. It's just you are maybe only getting 25% of the tank bonus from Bastion. It's not completely black and white. So you'd still have a little bit of that carryover. It's just not
two different Bastion modules, maybe. So you have to make a choice.
Right. So you either go with your tank Bastion, which gives you the full tank, and then a mild DPS increase. So like 25% of the Bastion DPS increase. And then you go with the DPS Bastion, which gives you the current DPS you have now, and then 25% of the Bastion tank bonus. So now you can't tank, 5,000, 10,000 DPS and do 3,000, 5,000 DPS. So there has to be like a specialization on what you want to do. Now, if you're a PvE person, and this is where I'd want to try to balance this, because again, they're more for PvE. If you're a PvE person, I'd want the DPS Bastion to try to align with most PvE. So like level 4 missions, ratting ANOMs, some escalations, things like that, to where the added tank bonus you get from DPS, from the DPS Bastion, is enough to tank those PvE sites. But so that way you're not affecting PvE focus too much. They can just throw on the DPS Bastion and they're fine. But then if you want a PvP Myth or a Marauder, then you need to either fit up both Bastions, and this is where there's a difference. Either you have two different Bastions, or you just have a scripted Bastion. So that way, if you choose the wrong script or you choose the wrong Bastion, you're stuck there for 30 seconds. So if you choose a DPS Bastion and you needed the tank Bastion, then that gives people a chance to break through your punch through your tank and take you out. If you use the tank Bastion, then you're not going to be doing as much DPS, and that means people can tank you. At least from like a solo perspective, like a Hyperion could tank you realistically, or a Maelstrom, or whatever the case may be. And then in a fleet setting, now you need to have your fleet members actually do something instead of just press one button and they're like, hey, look, I can do everything now. They're like, oh, I need to pay attention to what Bastion I'm using. And if they mess it up, then, they get blabbed during their Bastion cycle. So it provides a little bit more micro and a skill ceiling to actually utilize Marauders.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting. Oh, shit, I forgot to turn off the thingies here. One sec. I think it's interesting that you go with the DPS tank approach. While I actually, the main issue I see with them is actually, I agree with you 100%, but the mobility is way more of an issue for me personally. So when I take out a gang, and it was Hordrets, back when Hordrets were the fucking thing, right? I would always be able, not always, but sometimes be able at least to take the fight, like let them siege, take the fight somewhere else, and then the subcaps that would be there too, right? Like if it's a busy area, they would still follow and try to get tackled and stuff like that. But we have 5 minutes plus, right? So the dread would move after 5 minutes, but it takes a while, right? It's like more like 7, almost 8 minutes of like, okay, now I've got a window, I can make some plays and, maybe get something done. While with a Marauder, 30 seconds, like you might as well have no limitation on it. Like 30 seconds is nothing. That's like the cycle time of non-bonused 1400s, right? So like your RT cycle longer than your Bastion. That's insane, I think.
Yeah, well, it should be like 45 seconds at least. Like 30 seconds is too low.
Yeah,
I think with Marauders, I kind of agree actually with what Stitch was saying. I think a scripted Bastion module would be kind of cool. My main issue with Marauders is not the DPS, it's not the mobility, it's not the application, it's not the tank. It's the fact that they do all of them really, really well, and they don't really have an obvious weakness. And importantly, there's not really an obvious counterplay. I think one thing that should be done to them super quickly is just reduce their application, for example. I think if you want to be in this like hyper solo owning machine thing, then fair enough, but you shouldn't be able to kill absolutely everything that comes near you. If you want to be able to hit the frigates and the small stuff, then you should have to sacrifice some of your, say, range control to fit more tracking modules to be able to hit the small things. If you want to do more DPS and have more control, then sure, but you're going to struggle to hit the frigates. Like, I think there's room for them to be adjusted without like breaking them completely. I do think they should be somewhere up there as like an apex subcap, but I think they're oppressive at the minute, and that's the problem.
I fully agree with what everybody said. I think that Ithaca is right that both Pando and Stitch are right. the fact that they have mobility, such mobility, means it's harder to isolate the other ships in their fleet and pick them off if you're a smaller group. And the fact that they have so much damage and tank means that you need quite the force to take them down. So if you're a smaller roaming group or even a decent sized roaming group, like a Marauder is like a no-go zone, basically. You have to leave or avoid it somehow, but that's hard because of the mobility once again. Like, it needs to be hurt in one area or the other so that there is counterplay, because right now it's an I win button that gets slammed down on the table. And that's no fun, probably not even for the Marauder.
Yeah, I think it's very clear.
I was just going to say, then you have certain Marauder fits like XLASB Golems or XLASB Vargers, which are almost nearly immune to one form of counter, which is Newt Pressure. And both of them use capless weapons, so, you know, Golems can still shoot missiles and the Varger can still shoot autocannons. But you can have a Balegorn sitting on its face and it just doesn't care because it can just field triple NOS or double NOS at least to keep like the Scram and Web up or the Invuln up and just continue cycling XLASBs all day. And it's got like infinite cargo. Well, I shouldn't say infinite. That's obviously an exaggeration, but it's got plenty of cargo to fit, you know, a bunch of 400 cap boosters. So it'll just be there all day until you can bring a major blob to deal with it.
Or if it brings a major blob to deal with whatever it's fighting, right? That's the more likely scenario, I guess.
And it's the same thing that we dealt with capitals. You know, they're all N plus one ships. And when I mean that, I'm saying that the ships are designed to where you can't punch up to them. You have to bring more people. And, you know, yeah, that can be fun to generate content. And I'd argue that capitals are way better at that than a Marauder. Because capitals, there's some kind of, like,
understanding that you gotta be blobbed.
That's right. And you know, they're a capital ship. Like, that's the big ship. Like, you're going after a big ship that you know has a lot of tank, that you know is just, you know, like a set piece. Whereas a Marauder is just like any other battleship or any other subcap. It tanks like a capital ship. And it goes into all the places that other subcaps can go into. So, like, if you want to fight in the ESS, well, you know, there's going to be Marauders coming in that ESS to kill you. And unless if you're flying around with three alts, you can't really fight a Marauder solo. And like, you know, me flying in Tuskers, like we always have compositions to deal with Marauders, and we're using them every single day to deal with them. And it's boring having to base our entire gang around dealing with Marauders every single day just because they're everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to say that earlier, actually. Like, I think it's very clear. Marauders have just too much of everything, right? And then there can be different approaches, right? You go for the DPS and tank. Ithaca might have a different approach. I go for the mobility a little bit more. But yeah, I think we all agree Marauders have to be looked at, right? You know, but I think we also all agree we like to see them in space still, right? We don't want to get rid of them in space entirely, right? They are a nice target for a bunch of like different size groups.
Well, before they were buffed, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, before they were buffed, you never saw them. And that was also problematic because everything should have a place. Otherwise, why does it exist? But everything shouldn't have all of the places. Anything shouldn't have all of the places. Go ahead, Stitch.
Yeah, that's an interesting one about things having a place, because CCP Aurora said it on stage at FanFest about the carriers. At the moment, they don't really have a place, but they're really good at everything. So I just thought it was relevant.
Cat ears have a place. They're actually lore compliant. The Galente Federation has tons of body modders.
nice segue.
The one thing I wanted to mention on the Marauder topic was them being out, I think, is actually really good, because on the flip side of all this, Blop's battleships are designed to counter other battleships. Like, you know, they used to be like their primary hunting ground was hunting ratting battleships. Well, once like the drones and Ishtars and Hela's were all rebalanced, you know, ratting battleships pretty much disappeared. So having Marauders out being the, you know, the primary ratting battleship is actually really good for Blop's groups. So it's not that I want them nerfed into the ground or where they're useless again. It's just, you know, there's a point in between old Marauders and overbuff Marauders where they can still be viable in PvE and still have uses. They just don't need to be so strong to the point to where they're the best at everything in PvE, PvP, fleets. You know, you name it, and they're the pinnacle of it. Like, there's definitely room, some wiggle room in there.
All right. I'm just glad we all agree, because for a long time I felt like, am I the only guy? Am I the only guy noticing, like, every time I take anything out, there's a Marauder showing up and we have to whoop off and stuff? Like, am I the only guy? Nobody seems to be complaining, and I'm just glad, about the confirmation here. So, another thing where I'm sure we all gonna have different, like, slightly different takes, but we might just agree anyway. But what about jump bridges? Because that came up yesterday, actually. I was doing a podcast called Declarations of War, and it came up, and I was surprised how different the opinions suddenly were. So I'm like, let's see, does anyone here have a take on jump bridges?
I definitely have takes.
Huh?
So it's a sensitive subject, because I think for on one aspect you have NullSec and people owning Sov, so there should be benefits to owning that. Like, I don't want to say no, you can't have jump bridges or Ansiblex, but if we go in the past before Citadels, jump bridges were a thing already, and jump bridges had fatigue, and they also had it to where if you pointed someone on, you know, the jump bridge grid, they couldn't just jump back out, or if you had a bubble on it, they couldn't jump back out. Whereas now, Ansiblexes don't have fatigue, and if you point someone, even if you, like, hick point them or point them with, 100 points, or, you know, put 10 bubbles on the gate, they can just boat back to the gate and jump out. So it's like, what's the point of even camping the gate? And then, you know, to get any kind of response or escalation, then you have to shoot the gate for, you know, X amount of time for to reach a DPS cap. And it's just like, you know, I don't. And this is a big issue for me with Small Gang, is that all of our content to try to escalate fights is based off of timers. Like, playing a game based around timers, in my opinion, is like the most boring thing. Like, just give me a way to provide immediate feedback and actually start doing things. I don't want to watch a timer tick down. I don't want to waste, you know, 10 mil in ammo shooting someone's gate just for them not to show up anyway. And then what do I get? Like, what is it? Ansiblexes are like 1 bill, 2 bill, something like that. I don't remember now. But, you know, then I get some salvage out of an Ansiblex. Like, I don't care about that. I just want to fight people. So my issue with Ansiblexes is that we don't have... One is that they're allowing people to spread through space uninhibited. So some group that lives 3 regions away from their Ansiblex network can go 3 regions through their network to some other group and just skip all this space. When people are saying, well, space is dead, space is empty. Yeah, it's dead and empty because we're letting everyone skip it. Like, there's no geography, or there's no topography to the space anymore. There's no choke points when you can just bypass them all. And then they can do it freely without restrictions. They have no fatigue. So it's like if someone sees a rifter in their space, they're like, hey, let's go blob that with 3 marauders. There's no penalty to that. You know, if they take their network to go, you know, two Ansiblexes away to go blob a rifter with their marauders, like, there's no penalty to that. They can cross jump regions with no penalty. And then obviously the whole interaction with pointing them and them not being able to jump out. So I don't know. And I've thought about it more. I don't know if the way to change Ansiblex is to actually give them fatigue, because on one hand, that penalizes you just owning Sov. But maybe the other way to look at it is maybe you don't gain any penalty if your Ansiblexes are within your region, like you're not doing any cross-regional gates or jumps. Instead, you don't gain any fatigue if you're just doing within Constellation, and then if you're going outside of that doing like regional jumps, and you gain a little bit of fatigue. But then obviously the other thing is, you know, can we just, if we point someone on a gate, can it just not let them jump?
I think the jumping thing is a super low, like, hanging fruit that they should fix very quickly. I think in terms of fatigue, if there was like some massive reduction in fatigue, like 90%, for example. So if you move across your like three regions, for example, and you end up with maybe 15, 20 minutes of fatigue, it doesn't really penalize you for moving across the region. But if you move across the region just to kill a rifter with the three marauders, you're committed to at least waiting 20 minutes before you can come back without more fatigue again. So there's a little bit of play in there. I also think that we should, like, they should be hackable. Like, I should be able to, with my gang, for example, come into your space, hack your jump bridge, and then take my fleet through your jump bridge.
That would be, right? You know what? That would be kind of fun if you could just, like, have a mini game, like the normal hacking mini game on a jump bridge. But you have to do it, you have to wait for someone to jump through first, and you can disable it for, like, I don't know, 5 minutes, you know? And then whoever just jumped through can't just reapproach and jump. You have 5 minutes, right? That would be a fun way to do it too.
Play there. I think being able to, like, let's say, for example, you're a roaming gang and you're like, okay, we bring our loot truck, we bring our scanning ship, we stick a hacking thing on it, we bring like a couple of logistics ships as well. Cool, we've got our gang now. You go into someone's space, you hack a jump bridge, you jump through deeper into their space, and then you can move around.
Oh, you mean, okay. That's another level then. All right, yeah. So I thought you can hack it to disable it for just like a short, super short amount of time.
Why not both?
Yeah, I guess.
So my take on that, or my idea on that was, it was very similar, but provided a little bit more strategic value for gangs, is either consolidate this in with heavy interdictors or make a new ship class, something that could, you would just basically, we'll just use the hick as an example for now, but you would hick point an Ansiblex gate, and that would actually shut it off for like 5 minutes. And then during that 5 minutes, your hick can't warp off. It can't do anything. It can't turn off the hick point. So it's stuck there as well. So then that means you're at least putting some ISK on the field to say, hey, I'm turning off your jump gate. You're going to do anything about it. And obviously they're going to have to, go through normal gates to get to you, or the people that actually live in system are going to have to do something about it, which would then put a little bit more pressure on local content. The other thing too is, like, let's say you tackle a Rorik or a Capital or a Marauder or whatever, and you're like, hey, there's a jump gate in the system. We need to like shut that off so we have some time to work with, so we're not just getting insta-blobbed. So, you know, then you can warp your hick to the Ansiblex and shut it off for that 5 minutes. And then, you know, that gives you some time to work with instead of immediately getting, you know, forced a bunch of people on you.
So the hacking and shutting off of the hick aspect is something I hadn't considered before. And I really like that. I really like that idea. Like before this show, I was literally complaining to Pando about people jumping back through when I pointed them on an Ansiflex. So I fully agree with both of you on that point, pun intended, on that point, because, like, if you point somebody outside of, like, an Astra House, they can't dock, right? It's not like an NPC station where you can redock if you get pointed for the players.
Yeah. Why would you be able to jump?
Why does it work for the player gates, right? I also think I am on the side of having the reduced minor fatigue, so there is a penalty for going to blob the rifter or whatever. Because right now I think there's a lot of, whenever there's like a timer created anywhere, people will just assume like, well, everybody's showing up to this because moving long distances is way too easy. So you can't be like, like back in the day, you could be like, oh, okay, so these people live this far away. I know I have this amount of time. We can drop dredge real quick and try to one cycle the pass or something like that. And now it's people just move way too fast.
Yeah.
And that just puts groups that are smaller at a disadvantage because they can't do tricky stuff because a 1,000 billion billion trillion people are going to be on them in like 10 seconds from three regions away.
And my head is always like, my head instantly, like when you suggested the hick thing or the hacking, my head is instantly to like, what about bigger conflicts, right? Because that's, you know, something I, you know, get into every now and then. And I'm like, what would people do if you could shut them down with hicks? You can't really form a massive fleet of hicks and just shut down all of that. That's not realistic, right? So you would try to shut down routes of the jump bridges. But then you can't really sacrifice too many numbers to that either, right? So you would have to do that in small groups. You really would, right? Maybe you would just, some groups would probably go to the throwaway hick approach and say like, well, we're just going to like log in some hicks that we had locked off there and just like, you know, hack it. But hicks alone, like this so easily killed too, right? So you have to almost have something else there too. It's like... So I think
small gang interactions.
Yeah, like, sounds like ships in space.
That sounds like ships in space. Yeah, I think it sounds pretty fun actually. Yeah,
it would promote more people to say, "Hey, we instead of roaming as this massive blob, we need to have people set up in these like key points, you know, where these ansiblexes are that we don't want them to get shut off, and prepare in case someone does bring a hick, we can respond." And you know, force off the hick, but then that hick might be supported. You know, they might have like a small fleet there, yeah. And then you're fighting around this hick, trying to keep this gate shut off, and you know, preventing the blob from coming in. But you're fighting the blob's localized on the other side,
spamming jump, waiting to come through.
But see, that's my question now: is how like the details are important, right? So you have system A and system B, and there's a jump bridge, right? So if you shut down the jump bridge in system A, can they still jump from system B to A, or is the complete connection gone?
Because I think the connection is gone.
Some people might know.
Connection would have to be gone, I think.
All right. Some people might know. I love to do smart bomb shit, just normal bomber shit. If a blob lands on the other side of a jump bridge and I can shut it down on the other side and they would be stuck there, holy shit, would that be an opening for me to bomb?
I don't think it should be
an
instant thing. I think you would have to like almost spill up. So you can't just like decloak.
I don't know what
do it, because otherwise there's no counterplay to that. So the thing is, everything should have counterplay. This is the key. If you look at, we already have ways.
We go with Entosis links.
I mean, isn't counterplay putting a scout in the other system before you jump through?
That's the thing. But if you can decloak and immediately stop it, then there's no counterplay to that, other than just trying to have everyone spam jump immediately and hoping that you can react quicker. The counterplay is having a delay, maybe like 10 seconds after you've uncloaked or something before you can do it, because then there's time to react. That's your counterplay.
Well, I would say
you already do stuff with like waterboarding fleets where you have like an interdictor, like slowing fleets down. And there's very little counterplay to that. You can't actually really stop them unless you get ahead of them and kill off a few dictors. But they're so throwaway that nobody cares. As soon as you have something that has no counterplay, it just becomes frustrating. Like that fleet is now frustrated and slowed down. There's a tactical reason for it. But shutting off a gate, again, tactical reason for it, stopping the reinforcements coming in. But there's counterplay. You either have to stay there with your hick, for example, in this scenario we're talking about, and then send people to kill it. Or you have to time it right so you can stop them before they can react. Like there is room to play, basically.
Right. Well, I'd say the counterplay there is more changing the mindset of, instead of everyone just grouped into staging, you need to have some people spread out. And again, in these key choke points where you don't want your instablex to get shut down, you kind of need to think ahead of it and say, okay, well, if we're doing this big op, and I'm sure spies already know about it, then we should probably have like 10 dudes hang out in this citadel or, you know, logged off in this citadel. So in case, say, you try and camp this instablex with a hick, we can just undock from the citadel and go kill the hick, because it's going to be stuck in place for like, you know, 5 minutes or whatever the case may be. So I think it's more trying to facilitate saying, hey, you need to spread out and defend your gates, or they're just going to get shut off. And then you're going to have to, you know, slow gate through everything to actually go and push them off.
Yeah, I like the idea. And then someone brought up polarization. You know, if you take a different route to the same issue, like you could say like, all right, maybe we just keep it super simple and we just say, if you jump the jump bridge, you're polarized for whatever, 3 minutes or so, right? Doesn't have to be super long, but like 3 minutes, that's usually enough to tackle something, bump it off the gate again and stuff like this. You know, that would be an approach too. Another thing that I thought about is, like, it's very clear in my opinion that it's just like there's so many jump bridges too, right? It's not just like, oh yeah, you can travel in certain directions super quick. Like, no. You can get anywhere in your home region within 5 jumps, really. That's what it is. So what about a limitation of like just there's one jump bridge per constellation, for example, right? So people have to actually make decisions saying like, okay, we connect these two, and then in between jump bridges, there might be one or two jumps, which obviously, like I said earlier, like I like to bomb stuff and stuff. That's where the openings would be, right? That's where I could go in and intercept shit, because otherwise it's always the same story, right? They stage on a gate, really, like in a citadel on a gate. They see the gate, they warp to the gate, top safety, right? Nothing happens. They jump over, and there's the jump bridge on grid. So they warp over to the jump bridge. They can see if I bubble there, no big deal, right? So they take the jump bridge, and guess what? They land on a gate. They take the gate. Oh, there's a jump bridge on grid again. And that's the typical jump rule, right? And it fucking bothers me.
The question I would have with the one jump bridge per constellation question is that one jump bridge per constellation, like if a constellation is lived in by multiple alliances, is that just one jump bridge and whoever got it there first is the one with the jump bridge? Because if you did it like one per alliance, people could just make holder alliances and bypass that, right?
No, let people, yeah, even if they're blue to each other, let them fight it out. Fuck it.
Yeah, they have to kill the other person's jump bridge to put their own down.
So, if they have some beef coming up over the jump bridges, that's fine.
I mean, that could start a conflict. That's exactly what I mean. Smaller null groups, right?
So to kind of piggyback on Pando's comment there on like how jump bridges are set up, where they're like always on gate grids, or they're always at least within D-scan range. An idea I just had while y'all were discussing it was, what if ansiblexes couldn't be placed within D-scan range of gates? So then that makes you think, well, some systems can fit within D-scan, or all the gates are, you know, within the same ranges. So then those systems couldn't be viable for an ansiblex. So you'd have to then move your network around. Some systems wouldn't be viable, and, you know, things like that. So then it limits the uses of the gates more in a organic way, I guess, than an arbitrary way. Because then you start putting value back into certain systems instead of just every system can do everything.
I think they shouldn't be allowed to be put on grid. I mean, back in the old days when they had to be in a pause, they obviously had to be in a moon. You can only have one, obviously, per system. Maybe so, they should be on a planet. Put them in the sun, for example. Make everyone put them at the sun, and then the roaming gangs can just jump into the system, warp to sun, and there's probably a jump bridge there. Like, it's not hidden off at some random moon you have to de-scan down or in a deep safe somewhere.
I mean, that's what it used to be, right? You can just walk to jump bridges now.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I agree, right? I mean, in general, I think...
Suns look so good as well. The art team's been smashing it. So I think more people are getting to see the suns is better.
Yeah, but without getting into citadels or like structures in general, like I think that was one of the major issues at the beginning, that they didn't say like, hey... Like, it shouldn't be on grid, but gates. Like, and then they put them on grid with gates, and it was, like, it fucked with the bubble ranges, so they had to adjust the bubble ranges instead. And then, on average, that's going to lose content, right? There's less, like, less of a chance of bubbling shit. Instead of 1,000, it's a 500k in bubble range. And it was just, from the start, I was like, ah, man, don't you see? This is kind of weird that it's on gates. Like, I think you shouldn't be able to anchor any kind of structure on a gate grid, right? Off scan, off D scan, I don't know. I think you would go a little bit too far there, right? I would say like, okay, yeah, that's a little bit too much maybe, because that would be getting weird, especially in some systems, like you said, when it's too small and stuff. Like, I don't know. I think
off D scan from what as well, the other thing.
Yeah.
Well, just you can't have an ansiblex within, what is it, 14.3 AU of a gate. You know, and if you want to make up a lore reason, just say, you know, they get conflicting, or they you know, interact with each other and the data isn't transmitted properly or something. You know, so then that way, because the main reason I mention that is so that way you can actually set up traps between the ansiblex and the outgoing gate. Because if the gate grid, you know, if the Ansiblex is within D-scan range of the gate, then people are going to see the bubble. They're going to see the trap. They're like, oh, well, there's a trap. But, there. It's going to, like, bug off or whatever.
There's also situations where you want the Ansiblex to be super short if you jump in and want to catch something, right? So, you know, it goes both ways. So I think it would be, like, overcomplicating things a little bit. So if you jump into a system with a Dicta and you want to catch them, well, the jumpage is off scan, and then suddenly, like, you're getting caught on that jumpage. It could happen just the other way around. So it really does work both ways.
Yeah. So
yeah.
The last quick idea I have for Ansiblexes, and I think that's all my Ansiblex ideas, is a deployable that you can tether to an Ansiblex. And if anyone's jumping into that Ansiblex, it warps them. It lands them on that beacon instead of on the Ansiblex. So, you know, instead of being within, like, jump range of the Ansiblex, it just lands you, like, 50 kilometers off the Ansiblex.
I don't know. That seems like a very small-scale biased idea to me. I can only imagine the headache, like, taking a huge fleet through some Ansiblexes, and then every now and then there's, like, some dude shouting, I'm taking my Apoc Navy, like, 5 jumps behind you guys. I jumped to this thing, and I landed somewhere else, and, like, oh, my God. Like, I think there's a limit to how much the, you know, how much harassment, right? I would say that goes into the direction of harassment where I'm not too big of a fan of it. So, you know, I think, would it be the worst ever? I don't think so, but I think, again, I think now we're getting a little bit too deep, too far with the ideas.
And I started on a high note, and I've just progressively gotten worse. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, you got to run out of good ideas at some point. You know what I mean? Like, it can't all be gold.
I mean, there's a lot of terrible ideas all about how to fix EVE Online on the internet.
That is true. And, you know, if you get elected, you got to be ready to listen to a lot of bad ideas, too.
Yeah, I'm going to walk in, and I'm going to say that all battleships should have 2 sets of high slots, and one of them should only be able to fit small guns.
Okay. Please, no, stop.
I actually thought about that before. That you, like, if you had, like, 2 racks of guns on battleships, that would be a fun gun. I think you could switch them back and forth.
It'd be so dumb.
But it is battleships, right? So it's like, man,
exactly.
Like, that's the ship you want to have in a battle, no matter what. But
bring the Swiss for the longest time.
It removes all the weaknesses that's built into battleships. Yeah. Like,
exactly. But it's just a fun, like, thought experiment. I think everyone here in this room is like, we enjoy just, like, talking about ideas. Like, throw it around a little bit, and then, you know, sometimes we step over the line, and then, you know, someone has to say, like, maybe not so much, but it is a fun like, thought experiment most of the time.
Yeah, it's definitely good to throw ideas against the wall and then just bounce them off people, even if you haven't fully thought them out yet. You can hear other people's opinions about them.
Yeah, sometimes, and something, like, falls out.
Yep.
Just, like, chatting doesn't you don't have to stick to just the very few things that you've, like, thought out in every single possible detail, because there's so many different areas of EVE. Like, what's the quote? EVE is 30 different games in a trench coat. Nobody could have theorycrafted literally every aspect of the game. And it's fun to talk, and sometimes stuff falls out that's useful.
Yeah.
So I had a question for you, Pando, because it kind of falls within your wheelhouse, I guess, being more, like, fleet-orientated. And one of my big changes that I'd like to see is weapon terracide, and also kind of reallotment of how weapons fit to certain ships. So I was curious on your take on if it would have a significant impact on the meta. And just the gist of it is, like, for example, 650 artillery, 200mm rail guns, what am I missing? Medium focus beams, I guess. Basically all, like, the lower tier long range guns. If those were made better and more suitable for cruisers, so, like, let's say as an example, the current 720 Munin would downgrade to 650s, because that would retain the same fleet fit, but you'd lose range and damage. And then 720s, or the large tier weapons, so 720s, 250 rails, and heavy beams fit better on, like, battle cruisers. So now you're shifting kind of the range projection meta onto slower holes. And then the smaller holes like cruisers and hacks would then be using the smaller tier weapons. Now, it's not that you couldn't fit 720s on a Munin. It's just that you would be actually having sacrifices to do it. Like instead of maybe two LSEs, you would have just a single LSE and an invuln and like a tracking computer, because that's all that would fit. Like, yeah, do you think that would have any impact or shake things up?
I definitely think that would, yeah. For those who are not aware, I think when we talk about a weapon tier side, so the idea about the whole thing is that there's so many different types of weapons of the same kind. Let's say there's like several ones, several 720s, several 650s and stuff, but they actually all do the same and then just a little bit worse, right? It's just like all 720s are kind of the same, but the idea would be that, you know, this 720 has more range, this one has more damage or whatever, right? And then for 650s, nobody uses 650s, right? So yeah, and you're taking this idea now further, and then you want to push 720s, for example, onto battlecruiser hulls. Yeah, I think I agree with that in general. Like, why not, right? I always, like, when people talk about the hack meta, I was sad, like, It's not necessarily the speed. It's not necessarily the tank. I think it is usually the range that makes it so crazy. Because like in numbers, as long as you apply, like, and they apply to anything anyway, it's fine. So they can, you know, sit at 100 and, you know, murder shit. And that just doesn't seem right with the role a heavy assault cruiser.
In the past, sniper ships were kind of balanced around being slower, or they'd have less tank. So like if you were flying a Rogue, you know, it was, you had good tank, but you were, you know, flying a Rogue, so you were slow as hell. But you know, or if you were flying a Naga, you know, you had good damage, but you had like no tank. Same thing with like Slippery Pete's, like the old railgun Tengus, you know, they had no tank at all, but they just couldn't be probed down. But now we're running into this situation where with hacks, it's like you have, you know, like the Eagle or the Serb or the Munin, where it's just like they still have, at least for a cruiser, they have good tank, they have great projection. Some of them have tracking bonuses or application bonuses. You know, they got T2 resist, they got good cap regen, they cost barely anything nowadays. And then on top of all of that, then they have the ADCU. You know, yeah. So it's like, you know, I agree. The main thing I would always like to see with hacks is that, like, just cut their targeting range in half. You know, so that brings it down to like a Munin at like 50, 55 kilometer range. And that's pretty much what you see with most cruisers. You know, they're normally around that 50 to 60 kilometer range. And now if you want a sniper Munin, you need to fit like SIG amps or SIBOs with info links and stuff like that to get it. But that at least means you have to compromise your tank to do that, or you have to compromise your damage. I'd actually like to see heavy assault cruisers lean more into like what you're talking about. Like, you know, they're heavy assault cruiser, like they're supposed to be in the thick of things. Like, I'd actually like to see them see.
You can't SIG tank though. That's the problem.
Yeah. Like, I'd like to see them get like an afterburner bonus.
Yeah, or like one little thing, a very low-hanging fruit that I've been on about for ages. Like, explain to me, why does the E-War bonus give you more powerful painters, but the defensive E-War bonus, right? I forgot what exactly it was called. It counters all the other E-War, but not painters. Like, why does it not give you a painting resist, right? It doesn't make sense to me. Like, that's one of the things we had when we were running a lot of kickies. We were getting killed by Hordrets. Perfect transversal, 1,000 meters per second in small, like as small as a SIG as you can get, full bonus and everything. And they just paint you to the max and just hit you anyway. They didn't give a shit. And it was just like, it bothered me. Like, if I had full info bonus and had a painting resist, then I could maybe think about SIG tanking, but nobody can really. On a larger scale, you will be webbed, painted to the max, and then, you know, anything applies really. If you're close enough, they'll apply, so.
Do you think that should only apply to just ships with, or only target painters, or should it apply to all EWAR? Like, you get just like, you know, a 10 or 15% resistance to all EWAR.
Well, that already does to all EWAR besides painting, right?
Oh yeah, that's true, because it gives you more sensor strength, and then you get more targeting range. So I guess, and to some degree, it kind of counteracts those other ones.
Yeah, electronic hardening was also thinking.
Electronic hardening is the sensor strength. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then another thing when it comes to the guns, an idea I like to throw around is that you get a speed penalty on long-range guns. Like, you know, you fit 720s, well, you're losing 10% of your speed, right?
720s are heavy.
Yeah, well, that's kind of why I was thinking of tying them inherently to heavier, slower ships like battlecruisers. You know, so you could increase the fitting on 720s or, you know, all big long-range guns to where it's actually a significant, like, yep, you know, nerf to fitting on a cruiser. But then maybe you could have battlecruisers have a roll bonus to fittings on those particular weapons. So, like, the Hurricane would have a fitting bonus to all projectiles. So not just 720s, but, like, autocannons too. Because, to be honest, when you really think about it, like, what new thing are you going to do with a Hurricane that has a little bit more fitting room for autocannons? There's not, you know, maybe an XL ASB fit will be a little bit better. The same thing for, like, a Brutix. Like, what's a whole Brutix going to gain from getting a little bit more fitting from blasters? Not really a whole lot. So I don't think it really matters in that regard if you just apply it across the board to offset the fitting changes on, like, the large guns. So that way battlecruisers fit really easy. But then if you try and put those big guns on this cruiser, then you're making, you know, fitting choices. And now you've kind of enabled this, you know, if you want the big guns, you got to use the slowest ship. So by default, you're kind of implementing the same thing. It's just kind of in a more natural way, I guess.
I, for one, am in favor of anything that buffs the Harbinger because I am biased and I use it a lot.
That's the role play again.
Well, I'm on Inelectus Matari, so it's not really the role play, but that's just a ship I like a lot.
I wish the Absolution was a little bit better.
Yeah, there's a couple of holes that, you know, that I would love to see and you know, be viable to fly. But, you know, maybe they'll get that time at some point. Like, another thing is always that the game should also have shit ships. You know, you want to have some ships that everyone thinks is absolute trash. You want to fly around in these and get all the fights. So,
exactly.
You know, it's
okay. Sure, but with constant balancing, we can rotate what ships suck.
Yeah, but then nobody knows anymore, and then they're like, wait, was it strong now? Was it shit? I'd rather stay docked. Like, maybe it got a buff last week. So it's like, some ships should have the traditional trash roll, and that's fine, right?
One of the fun things about having ships that are, quote, bad, is that you have a much larger engagement profile. Like, if you're, like, roaming around in a frigate in low sec, for example, and you're in, like, a worm, then people are going to see that and then probably not going to fight you because a worm is very strong. But if you're in, like, a Venture or you're in, like, a Tormentor, which is good, but it's not, like, super powerful, or all these ships that have a small niche where you can, if you fly them well, you can actually, like, kill ships that are, have a higher power level than you. That's a lot of fun. And I think if they were all equal across the board, that would just kind of be a bit dull.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, when I talk about balance, I never mean the game should be in perfect balance. It's more that the game, the meta should always be changing to some degree. And there, for Eve especially, having overpowered ships is actually good. It's just they don't need to be overpowered for years at a time. Or when there's a clear sign that, hey, maybe these are too strong because they're affecting everything, like, you know, Marauders and the old Capitals. Like, then, okay, we need to kind of shift that meta a little bit and change some things. But, like, having an OP ship for 6 months or something is actually really good because it makes people theory craft counters. What new things can I do with this?
It's kind of what's happening with the boosters, right? Some of these boosters are super strong, and they're only there for, like, a couple, like, 2 months or 3 months or so at a time. So they can make certain hulls, like, super OP. So I think that's almost, like, this has almost the same effect, I would say. But not everyone's aware. Yeah, kind of. But I think it is, I mean, does anyone have, like, a negative take on the boosters or, like, or positive, whatever? Like,
I think it's cool that they're trying different things, like, and they're not permanent. They're not just introduced these boosters as another thing to EVE Online. It's got a time limit on it.
Yeah.
It's a bit of experimentation. It's trying things because for a long time, it was, we've made a change. We will not touch this forever again until maybe we have to in 5 years, and this change is permanent and we will not be told otherwise. Whereas now they're like, hey, look at this cool new feature. It's temporary, by the way. It runs out at this time. And they look and see how people react to it. And then if people find that it's overpowered, they're like, oh, cool. That's going away anyway. Who cares? If it's underpowered.
Yeah, very low risk.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's really a good strategy to try stuff out temporarily. Because like if they work out super, super well, you can always make them permanent. Like the filaments were a December bonus thing that was temporary and then came back in a permanent fashion because people really like them. And doing more of that could discover more things that people really like. And if something works out really, really well, you can make it permanent. If something does not work out really well, well, it's gone after a couple of months. You have to worry about it again.
Yeah.
All right. I would say boosters, I'm okay with them as long as it's not CCP. I guess I was going to say delicately, but if it's CCP not being lazy about avoiding chip balance. So like if they want to do their own booster thing and just kind of tinker with things, that's fine. But I don't want it to be something where they're like, well, we're giving you these boosters, so we actually don't need to rebalance the Vagabond, or we don't need to rebalance auto cannons or anything. Because look, you have this booster that you can use like this one time per month. You know, isn't that great? You know, so, you know, and then with that also in mind, it would be, which they're trying to do, or I'm seeing it here and there, where they're kind of releasing boosters to tweak certain weapons. So like, I'd really like to see like a plus 50% fall off to autocannon booster, because then we can really see, you know, would the Vagabond be a lot better if instead of the 10% bonus to fall off, I had like a 20% bonus to fall off. So you could test that with a booster and then see, oh, wow, I can actually apply more than 150 DPS past, you know, 30 kilometers. Maybe it can actually be a good anti-tackle ship again if it had these changes.
Yeah. All right. Before we wrap up, maybe I want to ask you guys one last question, which is, so compared to all the other CSM candidates, what do you guys personally think? Like, where are you? Like, what's your advantage, or what's your, maybe that's not the right word. You know, maybe what's your special talent coming in? Maybe starting with Asya?
All right, so I think that the two areas that I stand out the most on are, I have the unique perspective of an RP PvPer who ties the game world to content creation in a way that keeps the sand in the sandbox, as people like to say. And I think I am the candidate who has had the most experience and had the longest time in faction warfare. I'm in an alliance that goes in and out right now. But over my 12-year career, I was in militia for like 9 years or something like that. So I think those are two standout areas that I have.
All right. Then Stitch, how about you?
Well, I mean, like I've talked about before, yeah, the you know, I've already had changes implemented into the game without being on the CSM, and yeah, I'm bringing a unique perspective because I'm just a single account. Single, you know, character in the world of Eve, of people having alts. So I have a little bit of a different perspective on a lot of things, and I try and use that perspective to see what might be issues in the game from like more of a casual standpoint. Obviously I play at a you know, a non-casual level, but I can still see the same challenges that more casual players would see, or single account characters, and then obviously, you know, small gang, solo, wormhole, it's kind of its own unique play style. So that's kind of where I'm more coming from. And I just want to see the game as a whole, not just one specific area, get improved so it's fun for everyone.
All right. And then last, Ithaca.
So I've got a lot of experience in a lot of different parts of EVE Online. I've been playing for quite a long time, done a lot of different things from faction warfare to wormholes to the bigger groups and tournaments and things like that. But a lot of people have that experience. I think what sets me apart is the soft skills that kind of surround that. So I have a good existing relationship working with CCP. I've worked with them for years as part of producing the Alliance tournaments. I know how they work. I've been through the processes of having meetings with them and actually doing a lot of the sort of things that the CSM do. And in my day job, I work in the space industry, I deal with taking basically feedback and things from people on a technical level, and then like coordinating it and putting it together and presenting it to stakeholders and things like that. I'm quite good at communicating and just generally listening to people and knowing when my ideas are bad ideas, when people like give me the feedback and taking that on board. So that's why I would say my sort of USP for the CSM is that not only do I have good knowledge, but I can actually interact with them very well.
All right. Well, I would say everyone who listened hopefully got a good amount of insight in all three of you, and I would guess most people agree you got, like, all three of you guys would be super useful to have on the CSM. And then hopefully, I mean, maybe all three, maybe we'll see all three of you guys on there. I think this year might have a good chance for independent candidates. It seems very playstyle diverse in general, like all the candidates, like everyone's kind of different in some areas. And yeah, hopefully, guys, even the big block guys, the guys in Imperium stuff, put some independent candidates further up on their ballots. And yeah, get you guys elected. And hopefully me too. Alrighty, then, guys, thanks for coming on. Was good fun. And yeah, see you on the next one, I'd say.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
And everyone on Twitch.
Thank you.
And in chat, thanks for hanging out. And see you guys tomorrow. I'm doing, actually this week, for those who are not aware, this week I'll do a public fleet every day besides Sunday, right? Because the next Sunday is going to be the last episode, the CSM thingy. And after that, I'll be busy IRL. So this week, we're going to do a public fleet every day, okay? See you guys in Jitter or on here or wherever. And yeah, thanks again. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.